mean for those who eat gelatin? When it's either kosher or not kosher?
Exactly. And this was, as we pointed out, I will try to discuss in Yetzer Hashem the study, the tshuva of Avadya Yosef on gelatin next week. But the actual phenomenon that we're analyzing is one that we've seen over and over again. Namely, things which used to be kosher are no longer kosher.
And because I'm holier than thou. Everybody wants to be better than the next guy.
That's absolutely correct. That one of the ways in which you can prove your true Judaism is by refusing to eat what somebody else might be eating. And unfortunately, this is a trend that's happened. It's sort of surprising to me that this has even taken place even in Israel, where after all, Avadya Yosef still maintains his absolute authority over the Sephardic community. And to rule against him is, to my mind, still somewhat surprising.
How can they rule against them? What is the basis of this?
Well, remember, this was a dispute, and a certain number of rabbis, essentially, mainly in the United States, but also including Rabbi Weiss, who was either in England or, and then eventually in Israel, decided not to use it. And in the United States, it became a flag position. In other words, Rabbi Aaron Kotler said that it was prohibited, and even though Rabbi Elberg and various and Rabbi Konowitz, who had permitted it, he was the head of the Agudas HaRabbanim, which was not exactly a left-wing organization, even in the 1930s. And he had a letter from Chaim Ozer permitting it. And we studied last time the decision of the Chazon Ish permitting all such forms of substances. Nevertheless, in the United States, the more right-wing position took hold. And then you had a conflict between what was practiced in the United States and what was practiced in Israel. And you would have a situation in which the OU would not recognize the products which had a hechsher of the rabbinate in Israel. That's an intolerable situation and could only be resolved in one way. What is it that you don't understand? This is a general trend.
Isn't it just that there's an halakha for something, so you say, well, the din is according to so-and-so, and this is how it should be done. But that isn't what's happening.
But that's my whole point. That's not the way the real world works. We saw that on the issue of the sturgeon. I mean, the rabbis who permitted the sturgeon, after all, included the Ramban and probably Rabbeinu Tam. It included the Notar Yehuda. It included the Marsham. So normally, if we had some abstract problem in halacha, which didn't seem to threaten anybody, and you had a difference of opinion with these authorities on one side and Rabbi Bannett, for all due respect, on the other side, you would decide in favor of the Notar Yehuda and the Marsham. I mean, if I had to decide such a case and it was not an issue, had not been a flag issue, I would certainly, and I didn't have a strong personal opinion one way or the other, I would follow the rulings of those rabbis rather than the single rabbi. But it became a big flag issue in Hungary, and therefore became eventually a flag issue here in the United States.
It's different in the times of Hillel and Shammai. Hillel was the more lenient one, and then usually went according to the
exactly.
is there similar sociology going on in the world of halal or other?
I'm not the person to ask. I mean, after all, seeing signs of halal is a relatively recent phenomenon here in the United States. 10 years ago, I don't think it existed. And now, if you go to, what was the name, that thing on the highway right at the border of New Jersey and New York, that, like a McDonald's or something like that, either Roy Rogers or McDonald's, we went on sort of the borderline of the Catskills in New York, there's a big sign, and they have special meals which are halal meals, and special meals which are kosher meals with a Soloveitchik name attached. They use the phrase, this is obviously some cousin or nephew or something, you know, the Rabbi Soloveitchik was mashgiach on that packaged meal. So now you see halal alongside with kosher. But this is something that I never saw before 10 years ago. And in where, when I was a child, we used to buy live chickens under the Williamsburg Bridge and then take them to a shochet who was right there. And the shochet has disappeared, but there still is, across the street now, a chicken, live chicken, store, which, and you can get it slaughtered according to halal rules rather than according to kosher.
fastest growing religion in the United States.
Around the world, then, most likely. Okay. I want to, so your grandson decided not to come.
He was outside, but he got a tour of somebody at 9 o'clock.
Fine.
So
okay.
I was figuring it would be embarrassing to walk out in 20 minutes.
I'm fine. It's good to see you.
All right.
Okay. All right, so what I want to do today is to discuss two items which are preparatory to the discussion of gelatin, because the Rav Avadya Yosef in his lengthy trivia on the subject mentions them, and they are relevant. Last week we discussed the issue of musk, and this was in some sense a comedy of errors, because the musk was treated as if it were a dried blood from a non-kosher animal, when in fact it's the secretion from an animal which is probably kosher. But nevertheless, assuming that it had those characteristics, nevertheless, Rabbeinu Yona approved of it, and the Rush disapproved of it. What is a little bit surprising is that although the Rush disagrees with Rabbeinu Yona on the issue of a prohibited substance which has changed its form, in a tshuva the Rush writes, "Udvash bePesach." What about use of honey on Pesach? Lo ra'iti adam noheg bo isur mishum chashasha de'iruv kemach. I've never seen anybody who is worried about the usage of honey on Pesach because of some worry that maybe some flour got mixed into it. Lo shchicha. First of all, it's just not common that some flour would be mixed into honey. V'gam nitvateil kodem haPesach. And even if some flour had fallen into the honey, it would have become batel before the Pesach. V'im banu le'esor dvash mishum chashash tarovot. And if you're going to prohibit honey because there might be something improper mixed in with it, ne'esor oto kol hashana, we should prohibit it all year long, v'yesh amrim shenotnim letocho basar nevela, that some people say that in the processing of honey they put in some flesh, u'metapech l'dvash, and it becomes superfied, I've forgotten what the actual word is, v'harav rabin yonazal katav sha'afilu notnim bo basar nevela, even if you put in non-kosher meat into the honey, Kevan demin muach, since it becomes dissolved in the tabech lidvash and turns into honey, it's permitted, mutar. The vata hashta azlinan v'shari, because we look at its current state, not at its origin, and it's permissible. So here, the Rosh simply cites Rabbeinu Yonah without disagreeing with it. So, I now want to study a tshuva of the Radvaz, which is relevant, so let's pass this out. Sha'alta mimeni, odiyacha da'ati, I should give you my opinion, al masha samchu elu shenotnim betavshil o bemerkachat hamosk, that they put into candy or cook, or something that's cooked, musk, v'hu dam chayat mema shenitzva, and this is the blood of a prohibited animal which has become crystallized. V'chein nehagu le'echol hatriyak, afilu shalova makom choli, and they also eat the triach, even in the case where there is no disease. V'harei yeshbo mi basar ha'af'a u'basar shara nechashim. And after all, one of the ingredients is the meat of the adder and other snakes. So those are the two problems. Okay. So first of all, let's deal with the musk. Tshuva. Al inyan ha'musk. Hinehu machloket ha'ramazal haya oser oto. The Rama prohibited this, v'rabim heitiu, and many permitted it. V'ani omer ki ein bo tzad isur kla. There is absolutely no reason to prohibit it. Chada, first of all, sherei ein otnim oto b'merkachat, v'lo b'shum davar ela mepnei recho. It's only given to provide an odor to the cooking or anything else. V'ein otein ela reach tov. It's only to give the a substance, a pleasant odor, ulevasem huda of it, v'lo l'tam. It's not intended to attach a flavor, but it's only intended to give some odor. Uva'al makayim olam derecha lav milzai. And simply, an odor, it doesn't count for anything.
This is the same, you're putting perfume, that's a musk.
Yeah, the same musk that they used to put in perfume, to this day they still put in candy.
We used to make it synthetically, organic.
Who's we? Yeah, it's a lot cheaper to make it than to buy it.
Right,
but I understand that the synthetic product is not as good as the original. Okay, so first of all, he says, if all of this is to provide a perfume rather than a taste, then it's permissible. What the difference between perfume and taste is isn't 100% clear physiologically, but in any event, he makes this distinction. That's one reason. Yeah, but what you taste with your tongue and what you taste with your nostrils, with your smelling buds, it's not clear what the distinction actually is. Some of the more subtle flavors that you taste with salt or the aroma is, okay, whatever event, he says aroma doesn't count. Secondly, the two, furthermore, shekvar nitbatel mitorat ochel, mirov hazman. Secondly, it has ceased being any form of food because it's been crystallized for all this long period. V'chazar liyot afar ba'alma. And it's been converted into some just ordinary, just dirt, just earth. V'dami l'chalav shebekeva. It's like whatever milk is found in the stomach of a calf. Shechozer liyot pirsha. It just turns into garbage. Afar pi shel midimitchila haya ochel. Rabbeinu Yonah Zal Hevir Ayam Mehadvash Shekol Ma Shemitarei B'Tocho Chozer Liyot Kamol V'Tahashta Asglinan V'Lo B'Tah Meikarak V'Ikar. We look at the substance as it is now, not necessarily as into the origin of the substance. So if you have some prohibited foodstuffs which has changed its form drastically, then you know, it no longer retains its status of use.
Couldn't you say that the origin is more than
No, he's saying that if you have some, Rabbeinu Yonah said the following. Rabbeinu Yonah said that if you have some type of prohibited foodstuffs, which completely changes its form, it's become completely crystallized, for example. You put it into some honey and it's now, all of the inner workings have disappeared and it's all turned, become sugarized. What is the correct word, I found?
Caramelized.
What is the right word? It's become crystallized. Whatever. It's become sugarified. Let's invent a word. Okay? Rabbeinu Yonah says if the meat has changed so much that it's now become crystalline like sugar, it's become, then it lost its original status. Rabbeinu Yonah says that even for something which never became inedible in the intermediate process. What we've learned, that's Rabbeinu Yonah's position. And the what we learned last week was from the Rush, says that if in the course, that if this is something that's done by human intervention, and in the intermediate stage it has become inedible, even though it originally was prohibited, it's lost its original status. I mean, you have to draw the line somewhere, right? I mean, if you have a dead animal and you put it into your manure and then you grow some plants on it, you're not going to prohibit the plants. The Gemara itself said in Temura that if you had a egg from a treif of chicken, the egg is prohibited, but if the egg is fertilized, had been fertilized, and then develops into a chick, then the chick is permissible, even though it came from a non-kosher egg, because in some intermediate stage, it passed through an inedible state. So we have two different rulings here. One in which you have an extract from a substance which was prohibited and it completely changed its form. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, even without its having passed through an inedible stage, it has become permissible because you look at what it is now, not at what its origin was. And according to the Chazon Ish's interpretation of this difference of opinion between Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rush, if during some intermediate stage by human intervention it became inedible, then all authorities would agree that it's permissible. This is what we learned in the Rush last week. And all that I'm saying here is that the Radvaz also subscribes to this position. So he's giving three reasons for allowing the use of musk as an additive, as a perfume, in candy or in other types of cookery. And yet, a kala de milta, right? The whole ochel are a prohibited foodstuff which has changed its form, and especially if it's changed its form in such by human intervention, and especially if it's changed its form in such a way that it has become, in the intermediate stage, completely inedible, then it becomes permissible.
So if it's a fire, who wants it anyway? It's already done.
No, you want it because you want it in the case of the mosque, it has become crispal.
Oh, they call it a fire.
Yeah, it means that it, yeah, you want these crystals to give a powerful odor and aroma. You have to pay a huge fortune for an ounce of pure musk.
There was another, I think I remember when we did this some years ago, it was also the criteria of that it was unrecognizable in its form.
That's what he said. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that if the form has changed, even without its having passed through an inedible stage, it becomes permissible. Right, can't tell
it.
Either lachilas adam or lachilas kelet. We'll discuss that in a bit. Presumably, if it's eno roi lachilas adam, that will be enough to make it permissible. In other words, according to this.
Right.
So he's made two points here. One is this is only used as an additive. And it's not used to change the taste, but only to change the aroma. If you had used it as an additive to give a taste, then you come into the halachic problem of ta'am ki'ikar. If you added a prohibited foodstuff to a large mixture, even though it's only a small minority of the mixture, if the flavor is discernible, then the whole mixture becomes prohibited. That's the principle of ta'am ki'ikar. Then that's a completely different story. And what he's saying here is that if it's added for an aroma, it doesn't matter. You're going to have four or five different possibilities why you're putting an additive into food. What he's discussing here is aroma. Another matter that we'll come to in a minute is coloring, food coloring. A third matter is, as you say, consistency or texture, and that hinges on a slightly different problem of what is known as davaha ma'amid, something which is made to curdle, to solidify something. And that may or may not apply beyond the issue of curdling of milk, and we'll discuss that maybe next week, maybe not. But here, what the Radvaz is simply telling us is that this is added A for an aroma, and if the only reason you're adding it is for aroma, it becomes batel berog. It's not as if you added it for flavor. And secondly, he's saying that it's not prohibited in the first place because it's become crystallized and therefore has lost its original identity. And thirdly, it has also become inedible. In other words, for these last two reasons, for example, gelatin should be permissible, because you've made an extract in which, in the process of producing it, it's become inedible. And all right, now let's go to the triac. All right, from the Encyclopedia of Britannica, 1911 edition. Treacle. The thick, viscous syrup obtained in the early processes of refining sugar, the uncrystallizable fluid obtained in the process of procuring refined crystallized sugar, being known as golden syrup, and the drainings from the crude sugar as molasses. The word was properly and first used as a medical compound of varying ingredients, which was supposed to be a sovereign remedy against snake bites or poison generally. The well-known specific was Venice treacle, Theriaca andromache, and that Theriaca is close to the triac that we find in the Radvaz, a compound of a large number of drugs reduced to an electuary, a medical compound prepared with honey which dissolves in the mouth. The old French triacle, of which treacle, earlier triacle, is an adaptation, is a corruption of theriac, Latin theriaca, Greek theriaca. Literally, dogs use as an antidote against the bite of the poisonous of wild animals. Okay? Now, that's the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, let me read two quotes from the web. The black tips of crab claws, or the black tips of crab claws in the jelly of vipers, is, by some accounts, gelatinized snake flesh. By other accounts, jelly of vipers is got up from the skins that snakes shed as they grow. In any case, it has been popular for almost 5,000 years and has been used in ancient Sumer. Martha Washington, however, let it out of her personal Gascoigne's powder recipe, substituting jelly of hartshorn to make the paste. Jelly of vipers are no, such a present and easy remedy. Such a present and easy remedy, however effective, may have been too tedious for some Smith's readers. No doubt, even those who admired its ingeniousness were occasionally short of stones from Oriental animal bellies. It may have been, too, that some of the apothecaries were embarrassed by a poor crop of molten crayfish with lime concretions in their elementary apparatus. Here's another article, which is a little more detailed, by someone by the name of Eggleston, and the title is Some Curious Colonial Remedies, from the American Historical Review in 1899. Back through a long line of medical writers, we retrace the belief in the virtues of the Theriac and Mithridate to Galen and into the centuries before Galen. The accepted story of its origin is that Mithridates, king of Pontus, by a series of experiments on criminals, had found out, or thought he had found out, what medicaments would neutralize various poisons. These he put together for a universal antidote. Andromachus, physician to Nero, changed the constitution of the remedy by adding the flesh of a viper, perhaps on the principle of curing like by like. The remedy of Andromachus was the famous Theriac. That's what the Rivash is talking, about, which was so much lauded by Galen, and which imposed itself on even modern times. It was expelled by the British Pharmacopoeia only in the middle of the 18th century by a bare majority of one vote in the college. It contained more than 60 ingredients and was commonly known in England as Venice Treacle. Not only all poisons, but many diseases were supposed to be conquerable by this universal remedy. Numerous other preparations of viper's flesh were in use. Things poisonous were thought to contain much virtue. What Theriac was used in the colonies was no doubt made abroad. In less complicated preparations, the American rattlesnake was made to take the place held for thousands of years by its rival in virulence, the European viper. Flesh of the rattlesnake was fed to the infirm, perhaps in broths, even as the vipers was given for ages, and as the Scotch used the adder. His gall mixed with chalk was made into snake balls and given internally. His heart was dried and powdered and drunk in wine or beer to cure the venom of the snake on the ancient principle of curing likes by likes. In Virginia, the oil of a snake was given for gout, while in frosty New England, the fat was, if we may believe Jocelyn, very sovereign for frozen limbs and sprains. The American backwoodsman of today perhaps unconsciously uses a substitute for the viper wine or theriacal wine of other times when he slokes the flesh of a rattlesnake in spirits to make the bitters against rheumatism. So this is a well-known, whether it's still part of the American pharmacopoeia, I don't know. But this was what is the Treac. Okay? All right, now let's revert to the Chula. Well, the Indian had Treac. Mahai Tami Nami Muta, and as far as the taking of the Triak is concerned, this is also permissible for the same reason. Shaharei Ma'arvinbo Ma'arvinoto B'tufot Acherot. It's only part of an ingredient for other with other remedies. Udvarim Acherim Ad Shenifsal Me'Achilat Kelev. So it became inedible even to an animal. V'Afal Gav Di'Ervo Kodem Shenifsal Me'Achilat Kelev. Even though it was mixed into this before it became inedible, it's prohibited, lo kasha, the shiny chametz for Pesach, the isubei hanal, because Pesach is prohibited for any kind of benefit. So if the prohibited substances are asur b'hana'ah, then it doesn't, then it's becoming unfit for animal consumption is not relevant. But the snake of the whatever the adder or whatever snake it is, ein bo ella isur achila bilvad. It's only prohibited to eat. Hilkach kol shenifsal me'achila kelev. Once it became unfit for animal consumption, bein mitzad atzmo. Whether it became unfit because it simply spoiled, bein mitzad shenitarei b'dvarim acherim, Ki ze yatsa mitarato. It becomes permissible once it has reached an inedible stage. So therefore, again, for our practical today problems, if you're in the making some additive, and in the course of processing the additive, you added some chemicals which you may later remove, but in the intermediate stage it's become unfit for animal consumption, then it has lost its status of being prohibited. Umizeh hatam katav ha-Rambam zal behilchot chametzumah tov achena kilo v'aspanit v'avatiyah v'atoyak, all of these various forms of remedies, shenotam tocho chametz mutala kayaman bepesach, you're allowed to keep them over Pesach, sha'arei nifsadat zorat ha-chametz ha-kam. V'asur lo'ochlam, you can't consume them on Pesach, shehem isurei hana'a, u'kishe'ochlin nimtza nehena menaf chametz. Aval sha'ar isurim, other prohibited foodstuffs, kevan shenifsadat zorato, o shenifsal me'achol me'le'achol ha-kelev, mutar. Ba'od,
even a dog would need it, so what do you want it for? Just to make the processing? Or what?
You're putting it now, and it's now you've taken this inedible substance, and now you've added it, isn't it? Put it as a food additive. It's a food.
So it's not inedible.
It is inedible in the current state. Now you're using it as an additive. You're taking this ground up snake flesh, which has become, by the addition of other ingredients, completely inedible, and then you're mixing it up into some form of you're adding a spoonful of sugar, makes the whatever it is go down.
It's inedible stuff, and then you have to eat it, so it's not inedible.
It is inedible, except when you conceal the taste by putting it into some other ingredient.
Sounds like Benjamin Quinn. No, it isn't good.
No, it has become, look, this the situation is very simple. The food, it goes through a process in which it has become inedible. Then you process it further, and either you're using it as an additive or you've made it edible by some other means. And the Radvaz is stating the important principle, which, as was repeated by the Chazon Ish and by Chaim Moser and others, that in such a situation, once it has passed through a stage in which it has become inedible, even though when you process it further it has become edible, it has lost its prohibition.
No longer a food.
At one stage, it's no longer a food. Now you made it into a food again by processing it in some way.
Like
you make sawdust, either way. Right. There's no prohibition against eating sawdust either without any processing. Okay. All right.
I didn't like it in Jell-O or something. It's not really involved. It's just it helps the process.
Exactly. So according to this ruling,
it's a thickening.
Right. So according to this ruling, if you have ice cream with gelatin in it, and the gelatin has been processed, and in the processing it's passed through an inedible stage, then it should be permissible. Okay? If you have it on record, you'll have it even more on record when we read the Tshuva of Rav Ovadia Yosef, who's very explicit about this point.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. V'od, he adds, here, Shaharei Ein Kan, in our present circumstances, lo ta'amo v'lo mamasho, you have neither the flavor nor the substance of this snake flesh, שהרי אין בו חלק אחד משישים בשר, אסור, שהרי אין נותנים בו אלא כל דבר. It's only a minor. Only a minor amount. Okay? And now, if it's only a minor amount, why do you add it altogether? ושאמרתי, and here we need some medical opinion, ושאמרתי כי הטעם שנותנים בו בשר עפה, the reason why the snake flesh is added, כדי שיוליך אימו שאר התרופות אל הלב, להוצילו מדברים הממיתים. It's added as a substance which will cause the other ingredients to move quickly to the heart. No, he's saying that since you want to get this medicine into the heart in the fastest possible way, you will add an ingredient which will speedily move all of this to the heart. What?
Does it do anything like
this? I don't think that this is now on the FDA list regulated medication. But their theory was that since the snake bite kills you immediately, it must kill you by doing something immediately to the heart, and therefore if you add a certain amount of snake substance to the medicine, all the good stuff will also get immediately to the heart. You don't have to believe any of these medical theories, but this is, he's telling you why this was added as an ingredient. And it doesn't boil faster, it boils slower. It means it takes a higher temperature at which to boil, and therefore it cooks faster. And this is very reasonable. He's now giving you a theoretical reason why this medical analysis should be correct. Ki basaha afa lo yarpeh neshichato. The reason why the flesh of the afa will not cure its bite or sha'arasim, ela kevin shu eres memaher la helev, because it's poison that goes quickly to the heart, umolichi mo sha'ar trifot. And that's why they only put a small amount, because they don't want to put too much of the snake flesh into the medicine, because it will kill you. They also put in some other bitter stuff into this medication, and it's therefore this is not the normal way you would enjoy eating some snake flesh. The only person who takes this treacle is Ella Litzola. He only takes it for some need. Kagon, Shuhuragil Bakaeva Stomoka or Habetan. He has either a stomach ache or a belly ache. Bukhiyotse, Uchiyotse, or something similar. The Chevan Shadava Yadua Shim Lo Yuchala Triok Yechalet. So even if this guy doesn't have his heartburn right now, but he's taking this medication in order to prevent heartburn, then that also is permissible. Stick.
Something, but already was bitter, so it was
this is an ancient medical principle. I think the homeopathic medicine today is still based on this principle to some extent. Isn't that correct? We say something similar as far as amulets are concerned. If you need to take an amulet, you don't necessarily have to be allowed to take the amulet only after you've fallen sick, but also to prevent you from getting sick properly. But two, the basaha bedili in shimine. Furthermore, people are disgusted by the flesh of a snake. Imishum the people don't normally eat the snake, the flesh of a snake. I guess he doesn't know any Chinese. Imishum de meisi, either because it's disgusting, imishum sakanta, or because they regard it as dangerous. V'katav Rashi bazal, v'zeh lashono, dvarim hamahusim shenafsho shel adam katze behem, kenemalim uzuzim yitushim shekol adam meivadel mehem lemiusan, afilu yitavu betafshil v'nimche gufan letocho, im ha'heter haba alav mutarim. V'mikol makom, kol she'efshar levdoko la'avir v'masnenet bodeku masanein adka. And we call Hani Tani Nirali Shahamask Bahatriyak Ein Behem Tzadi Su. There's no reason to prohibit either the use of musk as an additive into candies or the use of treacle as a medication. For two, the Eni Karan Shal Elu La Achila Elu La Tufa Velo Gazru Moravana. The Yisur De Aita Let Vavu Afilu Zat Nishi Yotze La Achmir. The Yachogam the Kalmelan the Kola Asuli Tain Tam, Kugon Tablim or Hachmitz, Kugon Saolo Batil, Hani Let Lubi Hai Time Aklau, Share Musk, Enu El Reach, Basah Afa Batriak, Enu Elamo Lamovil, Kamoshaman. Bafilu Tema Shuruma Tema Mash, מקומקום לא ותמי אביבי וכן בקשה בקל להבין ולפיכך אין אני רואה באילו מקום קשש אבל בפסח אסור לאכול התפייה כאלה אם כן חולה שיש פה סכנה גם הרב יוחנן בכל מדברים חוץ מהצי השירה אפילו שם ישראל נפיל ואחרתן אין לך דבר עומד את היפקוח נפש חוץ מהקום בגיל הרעיות ושפי חדר So he's saying that if it has chametz in it, and then you're not allowed to use it on.
But not because of the triak itself, because
no.
if it's if
no, not because of, not because of the snake that's in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's not
chametz. That's
what's
not
chametz. So what's the fear?
He's allowed you to take this medicine, and he's allowed even someone who doesn't yet have a bellyache to take the medicine. So he's being very makil. He's saying you can put the musk in your candy, and you can eat. Treacle made with snake flesh. So he's saying, however, don't if it has chametz in it, don't use it on Pesach.
What has
a
tree on
Pesach? Yeah, the total mixture.
The total mixture. Okay.
Okay. It doesn't matter how small.
No, it's not what they'll grow.
Yeah, it was no matter what.
Okay.
But if they put the chametz in before Pesach,
it's all right. Yeah, if you shouldn't use it, right. But that varies. I don't want to. That's a complicated problem which we're not studying right now. All right. Next, food coloring. First, factual material. I'll keep one. What's happening here? Do I get mixed up?
Kermes,
yeah. There three, should be three items, Kermes, cochineal, and lac. Back page.
Back page. Oh, okay.
Okay. So Kermes, let's just leave the large print. A crimson dye. The word crimson, our word crimson, comes from the Kermes. A crimson dye stuff now superseded by cochineal obtained from Kermes elicis. That's a bug. The genus Kermes belongs to the cochidae or scale insects, and its species are common on oaks wherever they grow. The species from which Kermes is obtained is common in Spain, Italy, and the south of France, and in the Bermudian Basin generally, where it feeds on Quercus cochiera, a small shrub. As in the case of other scale insects, the males are relatively small and are capable of flight, while the females are wingless. Okay, and then it describes how you get them. Cochineal, a natural dye stuff used for the production of scarlet, crimson, orange, and other tints, and for the preparation of lake and carmine. It consists of the females of the Cochineal cacti. These are bugs that grow on cactus plants instead of on oaks. An insect of the family Cochidae of the order Hemiptera, which feeds upon various species of cacti, more especially the noble plant, a native of Mexico and Peru. On the next page, also, this is that, those were from the Encyclopedia Britannica 1911 edition, which you can download from the web, and which I did. In Asia and Europe, the ancient craftsmen understood the secrets of making several shades of red dye. One of the finest and most ancient was Kermes, and the source of our word crimson, and the Arabic name for a wingless insect living on certain species of the European live oaks. These insects were scratched from twigs with the fingernails and produced a powerful permanent scarlet dye believed to be that obtained from the Phoenician bits by the Hebrews to dye the curtains of their tabernacle. So the Tolaat Shani, and if you look at the Radak on the Pasuk in the first chapter of Yeshayahu, Luchuna v'nivachacha yomar Adonai im yuchatachem kishanim kasheleg yelbinu im yadimu katola katsemer yihiyu. And the Radak says, the upeirush tola, the meaning of the word Tolat in that passage of Yeshayahu is kamo tolat sheni. That is like the phrase in Truma of tolat sheni. Shehu tseva krimazim. So crimson is halad shani. Okay? And the Radak also elsewhere in who? I don't know. Okay, now what I want to briefly read is, as we pointed out, this red dye is made from a bug. The Rabbeinu Chaya in the Torah is upset by the fact that they would use a non-kosher ingredient in the making of the cloths for the tabernacle, and he gives some unconvincing answer to that. But it's certainly used as a food additive, and it has been used as a food additive since the 17th century, certainly. So I'm going to read simply, first of all, a tshuva. I'm just going to read the beginning of this tshuva, that's why I'm not passing it out, of the Moshe ibn Chaviv. So I'll read you his biography briefly. Moses ben Solomon ibn Chaviv, 1654 to 1696, Turkish rabbi and author. He was born in Salonika, a descendant of Levi ben Chaviv, and went to Jerusalem in his youth. He studied in the yeshiva of Jacob Chagiz, and from 1677 to 1679, he traveled as an emissary to Jerusalem, reaching as far as Budapest. In 1688, Chaviv was appointed head of the yeshiva in Jerusalem, maintained by the philanthropist Moses and Ibn Yayish of Constantinople. In the following year, on the death of Moses Galanti, Chaviv was appointed to succeed him as chief rabbi of Jerusalem after 1689. His grandson, Jacob Cooley, who published most of his grandfather's works, also had in his possession a number of other manuscripts which he used in his own work, Me'am Loes. A manuscript of his sermons is in the National Library in Jerusalem. The inscription, etc. So he was a great rabbi, died at a relatively young age of 42, but as an author of several famous svarim like Get Pashut and so on. And here is one of his tshuvot. She'ela. Almash shenahagu harakachim, the bakers, shenotnim tolat shani, v'hu hakirmiz, k'divay raharadak zal, v'osim kein l'teit marev gavan tov, v'chashuv v'nerkach. They use it to give a pleasant color to the various confections. Gam omrim sh'at seva halaz mo'il l'sameach halev. They also say that this color has some medical benefits. Uvukusva, and in Constantinople, notnim oto ba'asukar rosado, something red sugar, pink sugar, I guess, is how you translate asukar rosado. It must be some form of candy, which was popular at the time. V'gam osim melkacha sherkorim tablitas me'asukar. So I guess the sugar tablets, some kind of other, also a candy. In mekar kirmiz. Gam osim keachin misolet nekiya umavidim olehem tzukar in mekremiz. Miborilem in yesh yisur badavar. Is this prohibited, all of these, this food additive made from these insects? Kevan shahatolayim halalu asurim b'achila. After all, you're not allowed to eat these bugs. Odilma ein shum yisur badavar. Va'anu sha'alim mehamorim yivaru din zeh. This was the question. And tshuva. Zu shalcha elai hacham ha-shalem ha-dayan ha-mutsuyon ha-rokhlohan Abraham ha-levi, that's the author of the Ginat Baradim, ha-yoshev al-kiseo rabi ha-ez Mitzrayim, im ha-mahpsak shakatav ha-anidon ha-zev he-ela le-esor. The author of the Ginat Baradim decided to prohibit this food additive. V'liyoti mutsuva va-omeid al-fi k'tav ha-rav moreid Abraham yiyah ba-ezro. Since I was instructed by this rabbi to render my opinion, ha-galed da'ati b'din zeh, La'asod v'tzono chepzati, to make his wish my desire. V'gam shadati maskemet lahatir, and even though my opinion is that it's permissible, v'lo haya ra'ui lechtov lahalok al hora'ato, and therefore out of respect I perhaps should not have disagreed with his prohibition, mikom makom v'tachti v'tov midot ha'yishor, sh'harav nilu sh'lo yakpid b'ma sh'anit kotev lahatir neged hora'ato. I'm sure he will not mind my permitting this material in contradiction to his rule. V'kavanatenu hu l'shem shamayim l'hamir ha'alacha al boreha v'hineni ba'al tisedeh kuntus harav. And he wrote a rather long tshuva. The gist of the tshuva that he's concerned with is whether color matters. Chazuta milta or not. Whether, as far as the laws of a mikvah are concerned, for example, if you have a discoloration of the water by another ingredient, it may not be permissible. But he writes a long, detailed tshuva pointing out that although whether you say chazuta milta or you don't say chazuta milta is a matter of dispute, but in any event, as far as foodstuffs is concerned, you don't have to worry about it. So even though you're aware of the presence of this coloration, of this minute substance because of the color that's there, it doesn't matter, and it's fine. Instead of reading...